Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Chris Flannery. Two guests this week. Originally had one plan, but the news of Bob Lee retiring changed up our schedule. First up is John Orand, and John and I talk about Bob Lee's announcement, the longtime host, anchor, outside the lines presenter, who was the conscience of ESPN for 40 years. So John and I discuss Bob Lee and his career. We also get into the Women's World Cup ratings, Fox's interest, or in John's reporting, lack of interest in going after more PGA Tour rights. And then we finish up with a sports media draft that I was part of that John also had fun commenting on. So check that out. The last part is Jim Miller, who popped on the podcast. I really appreciate that, for 10 minutes to give his reflections of Bob Lee. Jim Miller, of course, best-selling author of the book The Oral History of ESPN, and has been someone who's known Bob Lee for decades and has written about him many times, spoke to him many times, and Jim gives some really eloquent words on the impact of Bob Lee. So first up, me and John Orand, and that's followed by Jim Miller, coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. John Orand, welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast.
Always good to come, Marty.
All right, John. This news broke this morning as we are taping this on Wednesday, June 26th. Bob Lee has announced his retirement from ESPN after, let me make sure I sort of have this, 40 years working there. He joined ESPN on its first weekend in 1979. He's retiring from ESPN at the end of the month. And as Sandy Padway, who the acclaimed sports journalism professor at Columbia, someone whose class I took, somebody who worked at ESPN with Bob Lee as a consultant on Outside the Lines, was a former Sports Illustrated New York Times editor, called Bob Lee the conscience of ESPN. I thought that was probably the best term I've ever heard for Bob Lee. John, this is very, very big news. Even though ESPN has changed over the last couple of years and a lot of Bob Lee's contemporaries are gone, it really, man, does it feel like the end of an era to hear this news. How did you take it?
That's exactly how I took it. And in fact, he had gone on a leave of absence that he took about 8 months ago, and then I guess about 2 months ago he extended it sort of indefinitely. And I always just assumed he was going to come back because I can't imagine ESPN without Bob Lee, less for his sort of on-screen persona and more like you said, the conscience of ESPN. Chris Berman just put out a statement calling him like ESPN's North Star. I think people internally and people externally just view Bob Lee in that role, and that's going to leave a really gaping hole at ESPN as far as its journalism and ability to be sort of like be taken seriously as an independent journalistic outlet, in my opinion.
Well, we'll get into this, but one of the things that you hit on that's true is that Bob Lee, he wasn't just an on-air face. He wasn't just front-facing. He was in discussions with the highest levels of that company when real serious journalism was happening. He, as he should have been, given that he was oftentimes the face of that when something broke, when Muhammad Ali passed, Bob Lee was anchoring that coverage. Bob Lee was, I believe, John, the front-facing person for ESPN's coverage of 9/11. I want to say that he was on the air very, very often during the O.J. Simpson trial. We obviously know his work when it comes to stuff like CTE, but for stuff like Paterno and Jerry Sandusky, Bob Lee was sort of always there. But he went
early in the morning, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, John, so he wasn't just an anchor. He was part of that decision-making process with ESPN management, and I think that sort of maybe ends with Bob Lee leaving. You know what I mean, John? I don't know if there's ever going to be an on-air talent who would have that kind of gravitas in the room with management.
Well, that's going to be what we look to see. I've always, every time something's happened sort of editorially at ESPN, and on this pod a bunch of times, I always bring up Don Vannata, Seth Wickersham, those are sort of, my North Stars of sorts at ESPN. When they start to bail, then it's in a little bit I don't want to say it's in a little bit of trouble, but it's going to be a lot different. But they're really on, you know, the dot-com side. Bob Lee was the journalistic beacon on the TV side. And the question is, like, who's going to be the person to step in there? I mean, Jeremy Schapp is a guy that's really now going to have to take over that top journalism mantle for ESPN. And it's going to be really curious to see whether he brings in or he – it's not going to happen right away, but how quickly he's going to get, and if he does get, that same gravitas that Bob Lee has.
I mean, I think – listen, I think Schapp has a lot of that. And he will be the face – the television face of this coverage. Ryan Smith, I think it's very clear that they're pushing him to be one of the faces of somebody at Outside the Lines. And I like Jeremy Schapp very much, and I have great respect for his work, but it's different. It's just he's different than Bob Lee. He was younger. He came along at a different time. And he sort of, a lot of times with Bob, you know, in the business, sort of had the B chair. Bob was always the A chair there, and Schapp was the B chair. So I think Schapp will do a fine job, but it's different. Again, I don't think you can overstate just the importance that Bob Lee has had on how ESPN handles stories. And the one thing, John, and listen, very few people, I think, who cover this stuff pushed Outside the Lines more than me and you have, you know, over the last 10, 15 years. And the one thing about that program was, John, I'd be curious to get your take on this, was that ESPN could always hold that up. When sort of things got serious, like you'd have your stupid nonsense on First Take, and you know you'd have somebody basically screaming that you know Kevin Durant should be signed by the Atlanta Hawks because he sucks, you know, something stupid. But like when things got serious, like Outside the Lines was always there, and ESPN and its 87 PR people could always point to Outside the Lines as like, hey, we're covering this here, you know, like this is, yeah, we have all this other stuff, but Outside the Lines is going to handle this issue on race. Outside the Lines is going to handle this issue on sweatshops. Outside the Lines is going to handle this issue on politics and sports. And like when you had Bob Lee around, you knew that like it was going to be handled, and it was going to be handled smartly and intelligently. And there was always an adult in the room. So it'd be interesting to me, John, just like, will Outside the Lines still provide that same kind of forum? Maybe if you want to be cynical, that same kind of cover for ESPN in the post Bob Lee era.
I think so, and I think that comes out to Jeremy Schapp, and I have just as high of an impression of him as you do. And I think that he will come and bring that journalistic ethos to that. The question is like whether or not sort of the management, like Bob Lee, it's been there since the day one. There was a certain, you know, he just carried something different than anybody else that's there right now. And if you think about it, from the TV side, you know, Vince Doria, who oversaw sort of the sports centers, right? You have Olbermann, Bob Lee. I mean, these were people who the leagues didn't like. The leagues don't mind if First Take is screening about whether or not Joe Flacco is elite or not, right?
Correct.
But they cared very much about when Outside the Lines, you know, reported on Ray Rice, or when Outside the Lines reported on concussions, and it irritated the NFL greatly, and I suspect, actually I happen to know, Bob Lee took great satisfaction in the fact that he was doing stuff that was really, like, you know, creating angst over in the NFL offices.
One thing regarding Bob Lee is, if you happen to want to search something online, one of the best things Outside the Lines ever did was its work on Pat Tillman. And sort of the cover-up on Tillman's death. Mike Fish did some amazing work, Willie Weinbaum, Bob Lee. That's something that I can't recommend enough if you want to sort of YouTube, get that off YouTube. I think it's – hopefully it's on there. But that show, you forget – the you is sort of the generic you. You forget how many great things that show has done, or that show has reported on over the years. I'll tell you another thing, John, about Bob Lee. Who I hope will come on this podcast in the next couple weeks. But another thing, John, that Bob Lee was so phenomenal on was soccer. And he really helped ESPN when it came to their World Cup coverage pretty much get credibility from, I think, the hardest markers. And those are soccer fans. And he was just phenomenal in his anchoring of the World Cup in South Africa. He was great for the Women's World Cup. I think it was in Germany. You know what I mean? Like, you put that guy on the air for 3 weeks for one of the most important sports tournaments in the world. He was a big soccer fan. He just knocked it out of the park. So he'll certainly get credit for the journalism, and he deserves that. But he was a phenomenal lead host when it came to soccer and some of ESPN's biggest soccer tournaments.
Yeah, in fact, I was just reading the Onion in 2012 had a story with his headline, "Frustrated Bob Lee Tasked with Explaining the Concept of Europe to ESPN Viewers." And it talked about his hosting of Euro 2012, but also it kind of shows, like, you know, he was the grown-up. He was the, you know, if there's a journalistic thread that goes through that, that goes through the company, that's coming from Bob Lee. And that's, you know, it's replaceable, but it's going to be hard to replace. And some people are really going to have to sort of get outside their comfort zones in terms of pushing back on management in a way that's, you know, that gets their stories out there. That's going to be the story that I'm going to be watching most closely over the next couple of months.
One note here from ESPN, in this case, is helpful press room. Bob Lee was the face of ESPN soccer coverage, John. 1982, 1994, 1998, 2010, 2011, 2014. Also, as you said, reported from the 2016 Euros. So, I mean, he was part of so many World Cups. He was on the set during FIFA's presidential election in 2015. I forgot about this. Became a signature TV moment when he ripped up a piece of paper with FIFA's agenda printed on it during a live studio coverage. And again, I will certainly remember he and Jeremy Schapp, the work that they did early in the morning on the death of Muhammad Ali. Again, you know, Bob Lee was an absolute, you know, just a class act on air. He's somebody who spoke many, many times to the journalism class at Columbia. I saw him both as a student and then when I was a teaching assistant there, and then when I ran that class with Jay McManus for a couple of years. He would always come in and be so incredibly honest with the students, and you know, he represented something that's just so important on television, and that's quality sports journalism. And you know, it's, I don't know if I want to call it, it's a dying art, but there's not much left. You know, Real Sports, obviously ESPN does some of this, but Showtime, etc. But like, it's a big loss, John. I don't want to understate what it means. One more thing here, John.
It's a big loss, but I do want to say ESPN has probably, you know, the best TV sports journalism department, I think, in the business.
Sure. I agree with that.
They do it more regularly. This is a gaping hole at the top of it. And I don't think they're going to all of a sudden roll over and just do PR for all the leagues now. But I do think that that's going to be an important role that somebody is going to have to fill. And we're going to have to see who.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that you know, when it comes to ESPN, is that they're feature producers. They're sort of investigative reporting feature producers, guys like, you know, Willie Weinbaum, et cetera. They're best in class. And as long as they're, you know, as long as they're committed, John, I think, to doing like E60 and to doing the kind of work that like Paula Levine does and things like that. I think, you know, they'll and you mentioned Van Natt and Wickersham. You know, the journalism is going to exist there. But you're right. It's a big loss today. Do you think, I don't know, how do I sort of phrase it? You think we'll see Bob Lee at all ever again on ESPN? Do you think we'll ever see a drop in if there's a major event, kind of like the Brokaw position where he'll come into the studio on a day just to be part of the coverage if something really, truly momentous happens? Or do you think he's done?
You know, I hope so. I hope that we do. I haven't talked to him since he took his leave of absence. And so I don't know where his head is. And I don't know whether this is something that he just wants to turn the page and move forward. So it would be a total guess. But I would think that ESPN would welcome him back if he wanted to do that. And I would hope that he would still come back in terms of you know, weighing in on some of the bigger stories of the day that happen. But I wouldn't have any idea right now.
Is there anything else you want to add on Bob before we move on?
No, I think we beat that one into the ground. But I think that
poor Bob, we've actually beat it into the ground already, John, in 14 minutes. I can't
already? How long have we been doing this? I will say though that I wonder if I always use my son as an example. I wonder if he even knows who Bob Lee is, or I'm not sure if he has he certainly doesn't have the television presence that like a Stephen A. Smith has, right? I mean, I think fewer people would know him. He would have a lower Q score or whatever. But this is something that will affect ESPN more than just about anybody else leaving their ranks, in my opinion.
All right, let's take a break from our conversation with John Oren just for a second to talk about Talkspace. We all need someone to talk to, a person who can support us through rough patches or even the everyday ups and downs of life. And that's where Talkspace comes in. Talkspace is therapy for how we live today. It's mobile, it's available when you need it, and it's affordable. Life can be stressful between work, family, and everything in between, and it's not always easy to find time for yourself. Talkspace online therapy makes taking care of your mental health more affordable and convenient than ever before. Simply provide your preferences for therapy, and Talkspace will match with one of the 4,000-plus therapists on that very same day. Send your therapist unlimited texts, audio, pictures, or video messages from anywhere and anytime. I think if you're a sports fan, you know, whether it's DeMar DeRozan or Kevin Love or Robin Leonard, we all suffer through things. And it's incredibly vital and important to have someone or a place where you can talk to. And you should know no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. So join more than 1 million people who have felt happier with Talkspace. Finding the right therapist does not have to be stressful. The Talkspace matching process takes your unique preferences into account to find you someone whose style and expertise matches your needs. And if you want to switch therapists, you can do so at any time at no extra cost. It's convenient and easy to use. You no longer have to wait for your next appointment to talk about what's on your mind. With Talkspace, you can send unlimited messages to your dedicated therapist from the privacy of your device, from anywhere and any time of day. If you're having a tough time, you can always schedule a live video session with your therapist for extra support. And this is affordable. 1 month of therapy on the Talkspace platform costs about the same as a single face-to-face session. Best of all, you'll never have to wait a week to share what's on your mind. All right, again, let's recap here. Talkspace has more than 4,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing the challenges we all face. To match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code TALK, that's T-A-L-K, T-A-L-K, to get your first week free and show your support for this show. So that's TALK, T-A-L-K, and Talkspace.com. Again, Talkspace has more than 4,000 licensed therapists who are addressing the challenges we all face. No, you're not alone.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, we were going to start off, John, I think, with the Women's World Cup. So we'll move to that now. And I think if you're Fox, John, I think you got to be happy with the viewership numbers of this tournament. You know, forget about the – there's two different ways to sort of always sort of evaluate this. One is the coverage of it, and that's obviously going to be very subjective depending on if you like Fox, if you don't like Fox, if you like the Fox people who are calling the games or talking about the games, if you don't. For this purposes and of this podcast, we'll sort of talk about the viewership side of it, which was really going to be an interesting story heading in because France is 6 hours ahead. And so the conventional wisdom was that the time zone was not going to be good for ESPN, and ESPN is Fox, and the viewership numbers were going to drop from 2015. What's happened, though, John, is they've been pretty steady. They were up for a while, I think, until the last couple of days. They may still be up for the tournament. But I think if you're Fox, you got to be psyched. You've done, I think, better than you ever expected, given the time zone.
Well, especially if the comps to 4 years ago, when the tournament was in Canada, are doing really well. They're up ratings wise, and the games from France obviously are in the middle of the day compared to in prime time. So going into this tournament, I just expected that they would be down a little bit, and so far they haven't been. The United States team is winning. The United States team, U.S. team is making some headlines as well. It's creating a lot of interest, and so I just, so long as that team continues to move forward, I think Fox is really sitting pretty on this one.
Well, let's face it. They have to beat France. They have to get to the finals for Fox to, for this to be a massive win. You have to have that team in the final to try to go for the big, you know, 20 million plus gold mine at the end of this tournament when you get so many casual American sports fans to tune in. I saw our buddy Austin Karp say that Fox drew a 2.5 overnight for the win over Spain. Very tough to compare, as you said, against what would be the equivalent, which would be FS1 in primetime for USA Colombia, Canada, which drew a 3-3. Through 3 days of round of 16, Austin said, Fox averaging an 0.9 overnight for all the games, up from 0.8. To me, being flat or up is a massive success when it comes to viewership. And I'm going to be really curious, John, to see what that number is for that France-US game. I know in France, you know, they may get 20 million people of a country of 66 million people watching. So it's going to be a major, major game in Europe. And I'll be very curious to see how that draws in the States. I think that game's at 3, right? So we're talking about another afternoon game during on a Friday. So tricky to guess.
Well, all the numbers have been doing well, but for Fox, even beyond the numbers, because I think the U.S. advanced, and they advanced to the quarterfinals. They do need to keep winning, but even if they don't, I think Fox is sending a message and has sent a message with the past couple of World Cups that whether people like how they're presenting it or not, they're showing that they can handle a big, massive tournament like this, and it's not easy to do. I mean, at NBC, they spend years preparing for the Olympics, right? At ESPN, I used to do stories about Jed Drake going to South Africa when they were doing the World Cup down there, and just the amount of planning that goes into everything. And Fox is doing this, you know, pretty well, in my opinion, and from France. And I think that it's a message that, you know, they're willing to spend on big properties. And it's a message that, you know, when these rights start to come up over the next couple of years, that, you know, they're hopeful. They suspect that other, rights holders are going to take note of that.
Yeah, they got an adult running it in David Neal. And they have a very good guy at the top in terms of sort of pulling all this off. And again, I know a lot of soccer friends, I know you don't particularly love Lawless. I know a lot of you guys, you know, some of you like Stone, some of you think he's too much of an American cheerleader, yada, yada, yada. Like, again, I get all that. That's going to be all subjective. But John and I are sort of focused on how this is playing as a big event. And I, you know, Fox has done a good job as being a steward of the World Cup, sort of in at least the Women's World Cup in that sense. There's a lot I would change about the studio, but in terms of the production, I think they've done well. John, one last thing that's tied to that Friday game. As we're taping this, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, tweeted out, pretty much blasted Megan, put Megan Rapinoe on blast. Not to get into Trump and his tweeting of athletes, because I think we'd certainly do a long show. I think people sort of know where I would lead on that. But John, I think this is actually going to bring more attention to the game. I realize it's not the point, but I feel like more when the president of the United States mentions one of the athletes on one of these teams, there's more attention on this. Controversy creates interest, and so I bet you that number, which would have been good, just got a pop from what Trump said today about Megan Rapinoe.
Also, it's the way that he tweeted it too, because when he tweeted about Colin Kaepernick and the NFL, he tweeted advocating a boycott of watching the NFL. But in this tweet here, he very specifically went out and talked about how he's still supporting the team, how he's still cheering for the team. He took his shots at Megan, of course, but he didn't do this in such a way that I think would dampen people from tuning in. I didn't think he did it in a way that alerted people that these games are going on. So I ultimately agree with you.
You got to root for France to own the libs, John. Just so you know, I'm giving you that heads up there.
is that where we are right now?
We are, yeah. Root for France to own the libs. Don't be a snowflake. Root for France. All right. So golf. This is something that you are interested in. thus we'll spend 4 minutes on it. Fox, you wrote in your recent newsletter, which I recommend to all, you have to be a Sports Business Daily subscriber, but it's great, that when Fox entered golf, John, I think it's we're talking now 6 years ago, 2013, with their 12-year deal for the USGA rights, there was a thought that this was going to be a prelude to Fox maybe going for the PGA Tour rights, to being sort of a significant player when it came to golf broadcast. But multiple sources are now telling you that Fox is unlikely to make some kind of bid on the PGA Tour rights when the tour's deal ends with CBS and NBC, right? So Fox, you think, is basically for the moment just going to be a one-off when it comes to the USGA events and not go any deeper into golf, huh?
That's the sense that I get. It's hard to do golf, and it's hard to do golf well. And they have a lot of other, you know, in the fall they have college football in the NFL. They have baseball all through the summer. And, you know, they're not as big a shop as ESPN is, frankly. And so, the idea of them going after golf is the PGA Tour rights, which I still think they're probably going to be there in the end, just sniffing around to see if there's a deal. And there probably won't be a deal because I know NBC and CBS are really want to keep them. But they I don't think that they're going to be Fox back when FS1 launched was sort of fiscally irresponsible, I think, is a way to put it. I mean, they outbid on a ton of people, which is what you have to do if you're a new outlet. FS1 was a new outlet, and so the only way to get somebody to come over to a new outlet is to pay a lot of money for it, and that's what they did to get the Big East. That's what they did to get MLS to come over. That's how they convinced MLB to put some playoff games on the cable channel. But I don't think that they're at the point now where they're willing or able to really significantly outbid anybody to bring the PGA Tour rights over. And so that's I just think that's interesting because they their U.S. Open coverage this year was fabulous. I thought it was by far they've had it for 5 years. By far, that was the best. And part of it was Pebble Beach, but part of it is they're starting to figure things out, and they just did a really good job with it. And so I thought because they were improving, they were getting better, that that the PGA Tour rights would make sense. But I'm hearing that they're lukewarm at best on the PGA Tour. If they get them for a song, they'll probably do it, but they're not as active as I would have expected them to be.
Fox's coverage fabulous. It's like I have Mike Mulvihill and Mike McCarthy on the line here. Fantastic.
You know what? I'm not sure if it was Fox or if it was Pebble Beach. It's hard to do a bad telecast in Pebble Beach, but I thought they just did some interesting things. I thought they had some drone footage that I thought was really good. I thought one of the complaints about Fox in the past is, they didn't really tell stories, and you had sort of a no name winning the tournament, and they had. I felt like I knew who he was by the end of the tournament because they just had so many backstories on him and told so many stories about him that I just thought, they did a really good job of creating pretty good TV.
I think critically they probably had their best tournament in golf this year when it comes to sort of.
Whoa, am I talking to Terry Hines here? What's going on, Richard?
Yeah, how it was perceived. Yeah, well, trust me. I mean, I think I watched like 20 minutes of it. But yeah, a great 20 minutes. All right, we're going to move quickly, John. It's like rapid fire. The IOC has provisionally approved breakdancing, amazing, as a new medal sport at the 2024 Paris Olympics. The other sports approved skateboarding, sport climbing, and surfing. NBC will have these sports, John. It strikes me, I think surfing could be a really good TV sport. I kind of feel like that could be, that's going to, I think like the viewership of that might be better than you might expect. I think people will dig
the problem with surfing,
the Olympics.
Though, is like, what if they don't get any waves during that Fortnite of the Olympics,
that's true.
There are all these great stories about the wide world of sports back in the 70s where they would camp into Hawaii for, weeks at a time on an expense account waiting for the, for the jet streams to work to where they could actually have waves to host a competition. So that's going to be kind of interesting to see, I think.
Do you like breakdancing as a television sport?
That hits me. I'm a kid of the 80s, right? I mean, I should be all over that.
We will see how that does. That could be interesting.
Are the kids today watching breakdancing? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a nostalgia
That is all of these are the IOC trying to get younger, and all of these are what I do find to be interesting about this. Breakdancing isn't an X Games sport, but you know, back when X Games grew so much through the 90s and early 2000s, and I thought back in 2000 at some point the X Games was going to overtake the Olympics just because it had this younger demo that I thought would grow with it. And what has ended up happening is that was a miserable prediction, but I was young.
Thank you, Josh Krulowitz. That's an awful prediction.
I'm going to blame it on youth. But what's happened is the Olympics have adopted, I mean, take a look at the skiing. They've adopted all these X Games sports. They've essentially gave a nod to, you know, what was created over there. And I think breakdancing, well, I don't think it's an X Games sport. I'm not sure if it is or not. But, you know, that follows on with how the IOC has been sort of, you know, launching all these new sports, in my opinion.
All right. We're going to finish up with this list that I was part of, you were not. So Jason Barrett is, I believe he's a radio consultant. He has his own website, BarrettSportsMedia.com, where they write about a lot of radio and some other stuff. He puts on some like conferences, and so he asked a group of, I hate the word sports media insiders, but I would say consultants, couple agents, writers, editors. Am I missing anybody else? Some newspaper people, sort of a 30 people sort of who have some kind of connection to the sports media world to draft the greatest sports studio shows of all time. So documentaries were not part of this. Scripted shows were not part of this. It was only sports studio shows. And the top five was SportsCenter, Fox NFL Sunday, Pardon the Interruption, Inside the NBA, and College Game Day. I had the number five pick. College Game Day was still open, so I grabbed that. I've said many, many times my top three sports studio shows of all time are Inside the NBA, College Game Day, and then there is a drop, and I think my next one might be Real Sports or something else. John, you were not part of this, although I think you should have been. What was your takeaway from this list? And I'm not even going to spend time on Mike McCarthy taking speaker.
Yeah, that was going to be my
number
first
eight. I'm just hoping that McCarthy gets a lot of Fox scoops from that.
If front office sports doesn't end up with every single Fox scoop over the next like 6 months, then it was a wasted pick, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to the show, but I mean, you know, I mean, you took him over Real Sports Outside the Lines, took him over Wild World of Sports. All right, anyway, so who would be your top five?
Eighth pick. So Jason did ask me to do it, and I declined because
big timer.
I declined because Austin Carp from our group was doing it, and I didn't want to double up on that. And so I thought my number one is, and maybe I'm dating myself here, but the CBS's NFL Today.
With
Brent, Jimmy the Greek, you know, Irv Cross, Phyllis George. I just thought that it wasn't the first studio show, but it certainly popularized it in a way that studio shows haven't been popularized before. And it, in my opinion, created everything that we're seeing today. There still is the NFL Today that's going right now that wouldn't be in my top five, but I think, like, you know, from the 80s and what Brent did, I mean, we're still doing You're Looking Live, which comes from that. We're still doing, like, Jimmy the Greek. We're talking about, I'm writing stories every week about how networks are handling gambling programming. Jimmy the Greek was doing that back then. They had and Phyllis George had, you know, a woman that was on set, which, you know, was not the norm back then. It was, I just thought that what they did was really
the podcast audience knows. I'm sorry, John. That went 17th. So your number one went 17. But I that's an interesting pick by Ark. And all right, number two.
My number two was SportsCenter, because I recall when SportsCenter launched, I mean, we would only get like like in the local newscast, we would get, you know, 5 minutes a night of a couple of highlights. And then all of a sudden you sat down with SportsCenter and it was like having the sporting news on TV. You saw highlights from everywhere. It was, you know, Terry Madeline, who was the one that picked it, said that it was equivalent of the advent of the internet. And I got to say, for like a, you know, 18-year-old that was going to college, that's completely true. It was, I scheduled my night around the 11 o'clock Sports Center just to see what happened. And the fact that you had a full half hour at the time, or even an hour sometimes, going through those highlights, I just thought was phenomenal.
All right, 3, 4, and 5?
Then I'm going to repeat you. I got Inside the NBA. That's been so good for so long, and everybody is trying to copy Inside the NBA, and they're not doing it well. And I think College Game Day, everybody's trying to copy College Game Day, and it's just been so good for so long, and they just created new ways of doing the studio show. And then for 5, I really should put NFL Primetime, because back in the 90s, that was something that was really incredible. But I thought Neil Best had a really good one that came number with the 9th pick on the sports writers on TV, which it just created First Take, and it created Skip Bayless, and they had Saturday Night Live skits about them. People, it was only in Chicago. But growing up in D.C., I knew all about the sports writers on TV. And, every other market sort of tried to get a show to copy it. That begat PTI, which Tim Scanlon picked with the 3rd pick there. So that would be my top 5.
Well, yeah, sports writers on TV is amazing. So just to give you guys their top 10. And by the way, the top 30 for that was picked would not even be close to my top 30. Good job by Jason Barrett to put this together. But
by the way, one gripe about this list is the top 3 picks came from people in the industry, and Jerry Madeline, who had the top pick, was with ESPN.
They all worked for these places. Madeline worked for ESPN. Patrick Craig's worked for Fox. Scanlon was a longtime ESPNer. Yeah, exactly. Come on, Jason, get it together with it. Well, listen, I appreciate what Jason does.
But it was a great idea.
Lord knows we disagree on a lot of stuff in terms of subjectivity. But all right, let me give the top 10 and check Jason's website out, because it is a fun read. SportsCenter was number 1. Fox NFL Sunday, number 2. Pardon the Interruption went 3. Inside the NBA, 4. College Game Day, 5. NFL Primetime, 6. NFL Red Zone, 7. Speak for Yourself, 8. The Sports Writers on TV, 9. Real Sports, 10. Outside the Lines, 11. Around the Horn, 12. Wild World of Sports, 13. Garbage Time, 14. 15. Baseball Tonight. So, an interesting list, and that's the fun thing about sports, sort of these kind of lists, is that it's so subjective. Everybody's got their own opinions, and sometimes that's what makes this covering this stuff fun. John, is there anything else you want to add before I let you go? I told you I wouldn't keep you so long today, and so I want to hold you to my word.
No, you know, I got my the Speak for Yourself off my chest, so I'm good.
You're good. All right, and if it costs you any Fox scoops, I apologize. You could always blame me, which is good when it comes to Fox. All right, John Olrand is.
I always do.
Yeah, it's a good call. Fox. John Olrand is the sports media reporter for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. And he has joined us today on the Sports Media Podcast. John, thanks so much for the time. I will check back with you again soon.
Thanks, Artie.
All right, as I said at the top, we have a little bonus here, and that's Jim Miller, who has been on this podcast many times, the best-selling author and writer. And he wanted to pop on today. I really appreciate just to say a couple of words about Bob Lee, as John Olrand and I did at the top. Jim, welcome to the podcast. And of course, you know, you wrote essentially the oral history on ESPN, and Bob Lee played a massive part in your book. You've known him for a long, long time, and I appreciate you coming on. Can you put into words what, one, the magnitude of this guy's career, and two, what it means that he will no longer be at ESPN?
Well, look, I think, you know, some of us, you know, saw this coming. I think you and I talked about this at one point, that it was definitely a possibility. It's a real loss for ESPN, but it's something that Bob has come to terms with. He's done it long enough, and you can certainly understand his perspective. I mean, the thing about Bob Lee and ESPN was that in the early 80s even, I mean, he's been there basically, almost from the beginning. And the thing about him was that he supplied, dare I say, the gravitas. He was, even though he was the same age as a lot of people there, he was always older. There was always just this feeling like he was more seasoned. He was he had a more of a journalistic approach to things. Didn't get too carried away with some of the goofiness that sometimes happens on the air. And most importantly, in times like the San Francisco earthquake during the World Series and the Pete Rose trial, which he was just stellar, he gave ESPN that sense that they had, one of their, used to call Jennings, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw, the anchors from God, or it was actually started earlier with Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley, Frank Reynolds. But my only point is he really gave that whole journalistic enterprise that started in the late 80s under John Walsh a face. And there was no doubt about it that whether it was 9/11 or other times, when something serious happened, when something had to be examined, and there wasn't going to be just any of this kind of, shoot from the hip analysis and crazy things said just to get hits and just to, traffic in social media, Bob Lee was their guy. And so I think in many ways, this is something that, this is a tough day for ESPN. I've already talked to several people there who have called, and, a lot of people are sad.
Jim, what's it mean heading forward? Jeremy Schapp is still around, of course. Ryan Smith, they'll be, it seems like, the faces of OTL. You have the Wickershams and the Don Van Nattas and the Paul Laverne's and Willie Weinbaum's. Many fine journalists who work there. Many fine journalists whose name are never front-facing that work behind the scenes. But this was the guy, Jim, in terms of he had a real conduit to management. He was, very fair to say, the conscience of that place. If something, no matter what was going on with ESPN, whatever first taking and nonsense was going on, if something serious happened, you knew you had Bob Lee there who would come on and be the adult in the room for that company. What happens now?
I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people doing some great journalism there. The thing about Bob was he was on camera. He was an anchor. And so this isn't somebody who's just coming on camera to talk a little bit about an investigative piece they wrote. I mean, he was really their go-to. And so moving forward, I think that they need to cast about and find that person. When there is something really, really important and you need somebody sitting at the anchor desk, sometimes for hours at a time. I mean, look, during the Pete Rose trial, and people forget how significant that was, I mean, Bob practically slept there. I mean, there were others involved and, tremendous reporting team out in the field, but he did a lot of that work. And I think that it's important for media organizations to have that kind of, person, or it could be persons, but they definitely need to sit down and figure out who's going to replace him, in the lead role. And look, one of the things that Bob, you talk about Bob being the conscience, when ESPN went through several rounds of layoffs, there was nobody who was more vocal and more protective of his fellow colleagues than Bob. And he let it be known. He took it very hard. He tried. He lost some very, very good friends and people that he worked with. And I think that hit him really hard. I think that in many ways, management was much more concerned about his reaction, quite frankly, than the reaction in the press, because he had such an impact on people inside. And I think that there were other situations. Look, with the NFL concussion issue, Bob, not only through OTL, but just because of his own journalistic DNA, was not about to toe some company line that he was uncomfortable with. And I think that made for some difficult times, but you never saw him taking the easy way out. The one thing, the last thing I really want to mention about Bob is that Bob Lee, in so many ways, is like an iceberg, because we got to see him on the air, and we, and I know you've talked to him, you know, at times, and I had the opportunity to talk to him, you know, throughout the years, but there was always, he was very circumspect, and he understood boundaries, and he had a very keen sense of what he should say on the record, what he should say on background, and what he should say, and when he should say nothing. And I think that, you know, a lot of people inside ESPN through the years haven't had that kind of compass. Most have, but obviously we know situations where they didn't. And so I think that that's another thing that's going to be missed, which is even when things get crazy, and even when somebody, when Bob, like for instance, was really, really upset about something, at least management knew that he wasn't going to take it public. He wasn't going to make it public, and he wasn't going to burn bridges and burn the house down. And that's an art, and that comes with maturity, and that comes with a sense of loyalty, but that didn't prevent him from, you know, sometimes being pissed off.
That's well said. One of the originals, a 1979 guy, is now walking away. And last one for me, Jim, real quick. I know you have to go. Do you expect to see him on the air again, whether it's in like an emeritus role at ESPN or in some other at some other place?
I mean, look, I certainly hope so. I mean, look, he's in his early 60s, and there's plenty of years ahead for him to do things. When Cronkite retired from the evening news, he did this special space documentary series and was supposed to appear on special occasions. I would hope that ESPN finds a way to maybe have him do a couple important key documentaries every several times a year. But he really did say he was retiring, so I'm not sure whether that's reflection of this moment in time or whether there have been some discussions that have already gone on where they've offered him things like that and he said no. I'm not sure, but I also feel like this is one of those things where people can, they have a sense of something now and they can revisit it in the future. So I'm not sure exactly where we are with this, but I do hope that there's going to be a way for him to be in the arena, at least from time to time.
Jim Miller is the best-selling author and writer, who podcaster. Check out Origins, consultant. He's been on this podcast many times, knows Bob Lee very, very well, has written about him many, many times. Jim, thanks for popping on for a couple minutes to give
thanks for having me.
Reflections of Bob Lee, and we will talk soon both on this podcast and off the air as well. Have a good day, Jim. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to my two guests, John Oran and Jim Miller. Thanks to Chris Flannery as well. We've had a pretty good run of guests lately, so if you haven't checked the podcast out, please do. Last week was Michael Grange and Killian on how to cover a championship team. They cover the Raptors and the Warriors, respectfully. Mark Feinsand has got a new book out on the Yankees about that book and what baseball writing is like in 2019. Before that, Taylor Twellman, the fine ESPN soccer analyst, on coverage of the Women's World Cup. And then Jen Hildreth, who's calling the Women's World Cup. James Andrew Miller, who's on this podcast. And then just go down the list from Taylor Rooks, Jim Ross, Paul Heyman, Renee Young. If you're interested in wrestling, Jamel Hill, Rick Riley, Ron McLean, Jason Benetti. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. But check it out. The only way this podcast continues is if you subscribe to it and if you leave reviews about what you like. And if you don't like it, well, don't leave a review then, because that's not going to help me at all. Lastly, in Toronto, the people obviously who know about my work at 590, Bob McCowan has left Rogers and left Primetime Sports. Just an absolute icon in the business. I said my words on Twitter. So if you're interested in my thoughts on Bob, please check that out. But as I said, he was incredible to my family, and I would not be in Toronto without him, and it was just a great honor to be sitting next to him for a year. I learned a lot, and as long as I broadcast in Canada, I'm gonna take a part of him with me. So I thank him very much, but he knows that, and we'll certainly continue to be friends. All right, so for everybody, Cadence 13, for my guests on this podcast, I appreciate their time very much. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Media Podcast.